Hello and welcome to the Preacher's Forum podcast. I am your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. Once again, I'm coming to you from The Rock, where we live in North Wales, the best place on earth, right here in the United Kingdom. Today's episode of the Preacher's Forum podcast is part two of my recent conversation that I had with Mike Nims, who, although he originally hails from the United States, together with his wife Cheryl, who comes from Canada, they are part of the Anabaptist Network UK. And what makes the whole situation even more confusing is the fact that their funding comes from the Mennonite Trust out of Canada. Now, if you didn't hear part one of our interview, and you're wondering, what in the world is an Anabaptist, or for that matter, what is a Mennonite, then you should probably go back and listen to the first half of the conversation. Now, if you don't want to do that, that's fine. I will just briefly say a little bit of a history at this point. The Anabaptist movement, where did it come from? Well, it came out of the Reformation in the early 16th century. The Anabaptists were what some might term the more radical reformers because primarily they disagreed with some of the teachings and the practices of some of the reformers, you know, like Luther and Calvin. They didn't think that the Reformation was progressing fast enough, so they were a bit more radical. The one fundamental belief or the issue over which they disagreed with some of the other reformers really comes down to this, the issue of infant baptism, which was practiced, of course, within the Catholic Church and also by Lutheran and Reformed churches as well. The Anabaptists, for their part, they believed that the practice of infant baptism was unbiblical. They held the idea that only consenting adult believers should be baptized. Now, that in and of itself might not have been divisive enough, but when the Anabaptists started saying things like, hey, we believe there's a whole lot of people sitting there in Catholic, Lutheran, and Reformed churches that aren't even Christians. Why? Because they're relying on the fact that they were baptized as a baby to get them into heaven. Well, of course, that's when a lot of the troubles started. And making things even worse for the Anabaptists, they held to some other theological beliefs that most of the reformers didn't. They were also pacifists. They refused to fight in various wars. And where does this pacifism come from? Well, they wanted to be people of peace, because they took Jesus at his word. It's taken from the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5, where Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers. Because of their beliefs and their values, they experienced a lot of brutal persecution at the hands primarily of the Catholic and Lutheran churches. And as a result of this terrible situation, many of the Anabaptists then fled to other countries, like the Netherlands, where they found sanctuary. It was in the Netherlands, by the way, that the Anabaptists and Menno Simons met up, and this is where the Mennonites come from. Basically, they were Dutch Anabaptists who became increasingly influenced by the teachings of Menno Simons, and he was formerly a Catholic priest who had rejected the Catholic Church primarily over this issue of infant baptism. So ultimately then, a lot of Anabaptists ended up coming across to North America because they were, of course, seeking religious freedom. And this explains why there are so many communities in America and Canada that identify with Anabaptist theology. You know, groups like the Amish people, the Hutterites, and the Mennonites, to name but a few. There are other Anabaptist communities scattered all over the world, though, that hold to these core Anabaptist beliefs or values or theology. Each is distinct, each is unique, but in some way these groups identify with basically those core teachings that came out of the Reformation. If you recall from the first half of our conversation, part one, Mike was describing some of the core values that Anabaptists and Mennonites hold. Now, I thought it sounded great. You know, values like being a people of peace, nonviolence, pacifism, and where I got the title from this episode, living simply that others may simply live. Sounds great. I asked him if he was describing the perfect church, but he said no, that they were just one option among many, and that like every other church or organization, they have their flaws, they've got their problems too. And this is a perfect segue into the second half of our conversation. Mike and I started talking about his experience as the senior pastor of a Mennonite church in Canada, and it wasn't so perfect. Now, I'm going to let him tell the story, but upon reflection, it always strikes me as bizarre that so many pastors and vicars of churches end up burning out and leaving the ministry. Why do churches do this to their leaders? You know, it's one thing for us to criticize, you know, high-profile health and wealth gospel ministers. You know, they have multi-million dollar ministries. You know the type. They fly all over the world. They've got private jets. They hold huge rallies in stadiums with tens of thousands in attendance. They're on TV every week, broadcasting live from their home church. They've got massive church buildings, complete with all the latest technology and all the rest of it. Now, they're too convenient of a target for criticism and satire, and I think perhaps on some levels, deservedly so. And we could also talk about other pastors, other church leaders who have abused their authority. They've exploited and manipulated their people, and oftentimes they're using the Bible to do so. But what a lot of people perhaps don't talk about so much are the churches that abuse their pastors and their leaders. And this explains why, in so many cases, pastors, vicars, youth leaders, church workers end up burning out and quitting the ministry. And it's a sad truth that many leave and never return. And it's a really sorry kind of situation indeed. But the truth is, there are a lot of us who are ex-pastors, ex-ministers, and this is something that Mike and I are about to get into in a minute, who were formerly pastors, formerly church leaders, who burned out. We've left the church ministry entirely, and we swore we'd never darken the door of another church again. But this is my question. Is it possible to come back from such an experience? Can your faith be restored? Not just your faith in God, but your faith in humanity, your faith in Christians too. I'm going to let Mike Nims answer that question. Here then is part two of my conversation with Mike. Live simply that others may simply live. I was talking about this quote-unquote perfect church. There's a lot of really good values that I hear coming out of what you're talking about, describing the Anabaptists and Mennonite beliefs. But you had an experience in Canada that wasn't so great. Can you, I don't know how much you want to go into that, but so there isn't such a perfect church, perhaps, after all. What can you walk us through kind of that story? This is before you moved over here to the UK, isn't it? Like, what? How many years ago did all this happen?
Started pastoring the church in 2009, there for 3 years. We moved here in 2013. It was a church that was divided. This is probably the best way to describe it. It was
right. So you came into an already divided situation.
Yeah. Yes, and it had made life difficult for the previous two or three pastors. A couple of things that were at issue there was that a certain group of the people had gotten much of their influence, much of their teaching from a very fundamentalist school that was nearby. So that they held a different understanding of what church was supposed to look like, what structures were supposed to look like, who could lead, who couldn't lead, the questions of power and exclusivism and inclusivism were issues. And that had been a big issue that had rocked the church a few years before we got there. But then you had another group that had a much stronger conviction to Anabaptist values. Most of them had studied at a different school.
Literally different schools of thought.
Different schools of thought.
Quite literally. Divisive schools of thought.
Oh, yeah, extremely different in how they viewed how church is supposed to be and what is the important aspect of faith and life and who Jesus is and what it's meant. But it created these tensions, different people vying for power and in different ways. What it amounted to, it seemed like as I got in there, my role really began to antagonize the issues, which sounds like a bad thing to do. And in a way, it created a lot of difficulty, but it was to get people to try to fully engage in what they believed and what they thought so that they would stand out.
Yeah.
So the people would see the gulf, they would see the divisions.
Yeah, see the issues for what they really were, because then you could hopefully talk about them. If you can resolve conflict on an issue level rather than a personal level, then you've got something, I think. So if you can bring those issues to the fore, you might actually be able to resolve these problems. So were you able to resolve the problems?
I wasn't able to do that.
That's unfortunate.
A bit inexperienced, as that was my first position as a pastor and being with groups of people. But what it did open up for two pastors to come in an interim role, a temporary position. One of them very good at pastoral care.
So this is after you left?
Yeah. Yep, after we left. So one person was dealing with the hurts and things that had come about with that. The other one was much more objective. So his role was to really point out what exactly are the issues and where are they coming from. And what it really came down to, as I've learned somewhat recently, is that certain people within the within the congregation were just being destructive.
Flat out. Mean people. Yeah.
Mean people. And some people would say it was a pastor abuser group.
Yes.
That if they weren't favored, they weren't given the authority in the church, then they would do what they could to basically destroy the pastor and get him to go. As it came about, as this person was working with people, he was able to go back to this group and say to them, people in the church have named you as being a problem in this congregation. One person actually got disciplined because of their abusive behavior.
Did they get booted out finally, or?
They are still there.
Still there.
But they have very little input in the church at this point in time. Also, the people then had to sign a covenant on how they were going to behave together as a worshiping community, which is really interesting.
Yeah, that you have to come to that sort of level just to survive as a group, as a church. Yeah, I mean, it never ceases to amaze me hearing stories like that. And you think, can we take a step back and say, what in the world are we doing here? We're a church. We're supposed to be about that kingdom of God that you were talking about and, you know, helping people. What are we? They're destroying pastors. And because when you came out of that situation, you guys were in a pretty bad state, weren't you?
Oh, we were beat up. We really didn't want much to do with
you were
church
burned out
anyway. Emotionally drained, felt very vulnerable to anything that would come around. So it was difficult for a while. It took us probably took us at least 2 years after that to even begin to get to a normal position.
Yeah. So you got chewed up and spit out in 3 years of working in this church. That was your first real pastoral gig. Would you say then moving over here to this country has that been part of that healing process? Because speaking for me, and this is something that Mike and I have in common, in that when we were moving over here, we had just come out of a very bad church experience where we'd had to close our church down and we got blamed for it and we were burned out, didn't want to have anything to do with the church at all. But coming over here has been really, really healing for us because we've been moved away from that sort of context in North America. And it's been good to kind of catch our breath and rethink where we're at. I mean, because not long after that, then you came over here, isn't that right?
We had about a year between the time we finished at that church and came over here. Our experience here has been absolutely phenomenal. Sometimes we say it saved our faith.
Yeah, yeah.
Part of it, a lot of it has to do with the people that we've had the opportunity to connect with here. Very sincere, very humble, very bright and talented people that have really taught us a lot of what it means to follow Jesus in a lot of different ways.
And that I would echo the same kind of sentiment with us. I mean, we did get plugged into a church. We said we were never going to church, but then there was a family that put us up when we first moved here. They were total strangers to us. They said, you can live with us. They were amazing. We lived with them for almost a month for free, and they let us get involved and everything. So we felt bad. They said, why don't you come to church with us? And we were like, no, we don't want to go. But we felt like it would be rude to say no. But then the church, they were just a very loving church, you know, and it restored our faith kind of in humanity, as you say, and in Christians, I guess, to some extent, you know, that these people were just, they said, don't do anything, just sit here. We want to love on you. We want to kind of let you heal up. And that was, we found out we had desperately needed that. You know, so we sat there for a couple of years and pretty much didn't do anything, you know, but we needed that space and that time, which they were good about giving us. So I don't know about you, but, you know, it's funny because I've left that church behind for a whole bunch of reasons. I don't have anything bad to say about them, but, our time kind of ended there and it was time for us to move on. Can you talk about what you guys do here in Birmingham? Because I came down here, my wife and I drove down here yesterday. And one of the things that we're struck by, I mean, Birmingham is the second largest city in the UK, is it not? I mean, yep. It's a massive, massive. It's this, the biggest city is London. Birmingham is a close second. So it's a huge city. One of the things about Birmingham is incredibly ethnically diverse, isn't it? I mean, we drive through neighborhoods coming down here and you've got Asian population, African population. There's mosques on street corners and things. And How do you fit into that whole thing? You're a white sort of American, you know, in a very ethnically diverse city, and you're an Anabaptist as well. How do all those fit together? Why are you in Birmingham, of all places? You could have ended up anywhere.
The decision for us to end up in Birmingham was really dependent on the people that we work for, the Anabaptist Network. So Mennonite Church Canada saw that the Anabaptist Network could use support, decided to send some people just to do networking, connecting, outreach for the Anabaptist Network. So we're actually funded through Mennonite Church Canada to be here. The Anabaptist Network grew out of the London Mennonite Center, which is now closed. They became just an extension of sharing an Anabaptist understanding of Christianity throughout the country. When the London Mennonite Center closed, they felt that moving to Birmingham would be much more efficient.
It's cost to be much less. In the center of the country,
which yeah. makes it a place that people are much more willing to go. People from the north are more inclined to go to Birmingham than to go to London.
It's a long journey.
It's an easy journey from London to Birmingham. But then there's also this culture of faith that's present in Birmingham. We have a number of Christian schools very near us. We have an international mission center that's just over the road from us. We have a population that's almost 25% Muslim, but then just diversity in faith and culture and ethnicity, and it makes it a very vibrant city. There are a lot of things here that we can actually connect with and engage in ways that we might not be able to in other parts of the country.
Or if you were just part of a traditional church kind of a setting, you're definitely not part of a traditional church, are you?
No, yeah. We're connected to a couple of traditional churches, but for the most part, we are parts of non-traditional churches. And our role takes us all over the country, connect with churches and other groups that would be traditional or not traditional.
Because you do a lot of preaching, isn't that right? You preach on average, what, 2-3 times a month, would you say? I mean, it ebbs and flows, doesn't it?
I would say once to twice a month. Right. That's starting to pick up. I expect over the next year or so, it's going to be considerably more.
We were talking about this last night. I mean, what you preach on, do you try to bring that kind of Anabaptist values and ethos into churches? Because a lot of people, I would assume, wouldn't be familiar with kind of your values, your core values. I mean, where do you stand on that? Are you trying to see yourself as a representative of Mennonite and Anabaptist beliefs? Or how do you see your role as a preacher?
Definitely I'm going to bring my values into it. Yeah. My own, because that's how I understand. I mean, that tends to be the theology I read. That's that's the approach that I look at, or that's the view that I read the scriptures through in a lot of ways. To a large extent, I'll bring those values, but I may not necessarily say, well, this is the Anabaptist way of doing it.
You're not trying to recruit necessarily. You're not an evangelist for the Anabaptist beliefs or values.
Well, and they already have their own congregation. They have their own people. It's hopefully I can come in and I can contribute in some way to an understanding of their faith that allows them to grow.
You were saying last night when we were talking, you like to focus on a lot of the messages of Jesus in the Gospels. Can you speak to that? Because you mentioned that earlier when we were talking here, that the Sermon on the Mount and those kind of, again, core values. I don't know how else to say it. Because, you know, the accusation of many times in the church is that we pretty much thrown out most of the Old Testament. We don't know what to do with the Old Testament. We don't even really focus that much on the Gospels. Most of the time, it's the epistles of Paul that get preached and taught on. Do you see yourself as bringing sort of maybe a balance in there, at least the message of Jesus, if nothing else, the Gospels? You know, how does that relate to our sort of Pauline theology in most of our churches?
Well, I think Jesus is really at the heart of it. It's a lot of the things that Jesus taught about would relate to the Old Testament, but there are a number of things in the Old Testament that do point to him. I think Paul's role really was about pointing out just how incredible Jesus is. Very often, I think I hear Paul being presented in a way that does something different, maybe even to the point of, I heard one person say that, and others have alluded to it as well, that Paul took Jesus' message further, you know, in a way placing Paul in a position above Jesus, which to me is outright heresy. And I can't imagine Paul would have ever seen himself in that role. For us, it's that significance. Jesus gave us a lens to which we read the Bible.
Yeah.
He gave us an image of who God is. When he says, you know, when you see me, you see the Father, we see Jesus as the most perfect human representation of God.
Yeah.
So that becomes the first and foremost in how we approach it. So if I do some preaching from one of the Pauline epistles, it has to hold that in place. It has to be completely consistent with the teaching of Jesus, or I've missed the point. For me, what I've seen and what I understand, I've seen churches around the country that place a very high emphasis on who Jesus is and what he's called us to do, and they're thriving. And you can go talk to anybody and they want to talk about Jesus. They want to know who Jesus is. I can talk to the Muslim evangelists in town and we'll talk about Jesus. And it's a place where it's very easy to come together without having to be in a position saying that you have to do this or else. It's about when we do this together, what's going to happen. Really does present this understanding of hope. It really presents this understanding that what Jesus came to do really is far greater than we understand. And people are quite willing to tap into that. So that's probably why I go that direction. And that's very easy for me to go that direction.
Yeah, it makes sense, isn't it? The book by Dan Kimball, I don't know if you read that, but it's They Love Jesus, But They Hate the Church is the name of the – it's a great title, I think. And this is basically what he found out. He was a pastor in Los Angeles, and he said he escaped the Christian bubble, you know, because he realized all of his friends, all of his people that he hung out with were all Christian. He didn't know a single non-Christian. And so he started escaping, and he went and worked out in a gym, and he went to the local coffee shops and started building relationships with people that were not believers. And they will talk about Jesus, as you say, all day long.
Yep.
He's a guru. He's a holy man. He's a rabbi. He's a prophet, whatever. The second he mentions the organized church, boom, the conversation's over. They don't want to have anything to do with the conversations about the church because, you know, they say the church is homophobic, the church is misogynistic, and in a lot of ways it is. In fact, this is interesting today because in about an hour or two, we're going down to the Pride Parade in Birmingham.
Yes.
You know, so we're trying not to be homophobic and be Christians. A lot of people would have a major problem with that, going to the Pride Parade. in a major city. What's your motivation for going to the Pride Parade today? I mean, how does that tie into all this stuff that we've been talking about?
It becomes a much broader part of an understanding of who we are and what God calls us to. We're all created in the image of God. Therefore, being there, I am seeing people that are created in the image of God. To go there and to be a part of that and just be present, I think is significant. I tend not to see that lifestyle is a sin.
Which, of course, a lot of people have, especially in the States and Canada. It's a hugely divisive topic, isn't it?
It is.
Not just in churches, but right across politics and everything else, isn't it?
But by being there, too, I support friends of mine. I have the ability to possibly get to know them better. I have the ability to just be present with them. So I can be someone that they can trust. I can be someone that, you know, in time of need, they know that they can come to me. I can hopefully be that presence of what Jesus taught in situations that I may not necessarily know how to navigate.
Because that's the question. If Jesus were here today, would he be at the Pride Parade today? Or would he be one of the ones picketing against it, like so many people would say? That's what we need to be doing. It'll be interesting to see if there are any people out there picketing against, demonstrating against the Pride Parade today. I'll be imagining that there will be some, probably some good fundamentalist Christians out there today that are dead set against the whole thing, you know, and it's sort of that Westboro Baptist kind of thing in a way in the States, isn't it? It's done so much damage to the image of the church, whether or not you agree with what their message is. It's got to have done huge damage to the credibility of the church just across the board, hasn't it? You know, being so full of hate against a certain segment of society. And they're not just confined to gays either. They don't like the Jews and they don't like, you know. So they're an equal hate, you know, organization.
And part of it becomes this aspect of loving our neighbor. Whoever they are, wherever they are.
Whatever label you want to slap on.
Yeah. Whatever label you want to slap on them. As I engage in conversation with people who understand this differently than myself, I really look at it that ultimately Jesus is the judge. It's not me.
Yeah. So can you be respectful and open and have a discussion, whether or not you may agree or disagree, and still remain friends at the end of the whole thing, rather than just being simply divisive or judgmental? You know, walk away saying, well, I was right, and that must mean they're wrong, you know, and that tends to be that kind of binary thinking that we see so much in the mainstream church, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
I'm right. The way I read the Bible is right, and therefore the way you're reading it is wrong, and I have to tell you that, and we have to divide over that, and if it means I have to go form another church over here because of it, I'll do it, you know, and you're down the road, and, you know, you're doing the same thing in your church, and we never talk after that, you know. Our friendship is over. Well, I think we're getting close to the end of our time. I would just say at the very end, how can people get a hold of you, Mike, if they want to talk about Anabaptist Mennonite theology? What's a good way to explore for perhaps someone who wants to get into more information? What would be the best way to get a hold of you? Are you on Twitter, Facebook? What?
We have a website, Anabaptist Network UK. Where we try to promote events and things like that. I can be reached through there. I have my own Twitter account, which would be easy to connect through there, Michael R. Nims. Also, just through the Anabaptist Network webpage, there is a way to connect to us through there, which will come through our emails. Few resources on the website. We're looking to update that and get some more out there. If you're looking for other information on an Anabaptist understanding of Christianity, you can look at Brian Zond, Greg Boyd, Ruxy Cavey.
Yeah.
You can listen to their messages. They've got books out. They've got blogs and Twitter and other things. They probably have done more for us here than I think we've done, because the information that they've made available has drawn a lot of people in, and we just connect. We have groups around the country where you can connect to, so you can learn more. Through us, you get in touch with us. We'll put you in touch with those groups. We have some places where new groups are looking to form, which is amazing. There's also, if you want to look on Facebook as well, there's a group called Piecemeal, which is peace as in making peace, meal, and it's one word. And they are people that are coming together as faith communities around a meal to understand their faith and life together as well.
That's got to be very appealing, isn't it? Yeah, because there's this huge movement of people that have left the mainstream church behind, but yet they would say, well, I still believe in God. You know, I still believe in those things, but I can't have anything to do with organized religion, organized church anymore. So something like the Piecemeal would be a great alternative, wouldn't it? I mean, and you guys do a lot of that in your own home here, don't you? I mean, you have meals and all kinds of people come and show up and people stay here with you in your house. You've kind of thrown your house open to anybody and everybody.
Yes.
So Mike and Cheryl are incredibly hospitable. We stayed here last night. It was great. You know, so that's kind of, again, those core values, isn't it? Just being hospitable, being open. And that's what Jesus would be doing, I would think. I would hope.
Jesus shared a lot of life and meals with all kinds of people. And coming around in that context where you can relax, you can be yourself, you get those things that really add something important to life. And we have the opportunity to do that. Sometimes 2, 3, 4 times a week, we've got people in here. Frequently, we get to go to other people's houses and be a part of it. We have one group that frequently is 16 people on a Monday evening.
Wow.
In a house.
That's a full house. And houses in this country are not very big, most of them, yeah. So
no.
That's 16 people is amazing. Well, I want to say thank you again to Mike. This has been fantastic. I would love to do this again if you want to do another conversation. I mean, as we're talking, there's so many more things that I've been thinking about, but we're kind of running out of time. Thanks again to Mike Nims and to Cheryl as well for having us in your lovely house.
You're very welcome.
We've got to get ready for the Pride Parade and the barbecue and beer festival. We forgot to mention that comes after the parade.
First barbecue and beer festival here in Birmingham. You have to be a part of it.
Be a part of it. All right. Thank you, Mike. Take care. And we'll hopefully do this again.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thanks once again for listening in to part 2 of my conversation with Mike Nims of the Anabaptist Network UK, recorded down in Birmingham, England, just a few weeks ago. Now, something that came out of our conversation right at the very end, we started talking about the fact that in a little bit we were going to be finishing up this podcast interview and heading downtown to Birmingham to attend the Pride Parade that was going on in downtown Birmingham later that afternoon. And if you recall, I asked Mike, you know, why do you want to be attending this Pride Parade? And it really came down to this issue of humanity. At the end of the day, you might disagree with a gay person's lifestyle, but they are still a human being made in the image of God. And this is what Mike was talking about. And this goes along with some of the Anabaptist core values he was talking about. And what struck me was, in the end, we didn't actually see any radical fundamentalist Christian protesters. What we saw were people in the Pride Parade who came from all walks of life. We saw school teachers. We saw people who work in banks. We saw scout troop leaders. We saw all kinds of people that were simply saying, you know, this is who we are. This is what we're about. We're trying to take pride in it and perhaps confront some of the negative stereotypes that are still prevalent within society. And, you know, I'd never been to a Pride Parade before, and I wasn't quite sure what to expect, and we saw some pretty flamboyant people out there. But, you know, I have to reflect back on what Mike said. Even if you perhaps disagree with the lifestyle, if you confront it and tell them that they're going to hell and all these other things that are still very common in a lot of aspects of Western society, but at the end of the day, whatever your views on the lifestyle might be, we are talking about people. And people want to be loved, people want to be accepted, people want to be respected. And if our attitude is going to be confrontational and judgmental as Christians, then I can't understand for the life of me how we are going to be able to have any sort of meaningful dialogue. And it's not just about someone who might be gay. It's anyone who might disagree with us. And so this is what I took away from going to the Pride Parade and having that conversation with Mike. And hopefully, if you disagree or agree, that's fine. I'd like to hear from you. You can contact me on a variety of different social media platforms. I'd love to hear your thoughts and questions and issues perhaps that came out of this particular conversation with Mike. You can follow me on Twitter at Preachers Forum. You can also find me on Instagram under the same name at Preachers Forum. You can also find me on Facebook, facebook.com/The Preachers Forum. You can always send me an email as well, preachersforum@gmail.com. And you can finally stop by my website, preachersforum.com, where you'll find a whole variety of resources and articles, which is all about critical thinking about God, the church, and spirituality, which is the aim of the Preachers Forum, both the podcast and my website as well. So once again, I'm Dr. Clint Haycock. Thank you for joining me for part two of this conversation with Mike Nims of the Anabaptist Network. Next week, be sure and tune in on Friday when the next episode drops. I have a fantastic interview with Bishop Mike Royal, who is a black activist, theologian, pastor, again out of Birmingham, England. His family comes originally from Jamaica, but he himself was born and raised in London, and he has some absolutely phenomenal things to say about social activism, politics. We start talking about Donald Trump and the recent tragedy in the UK with the Grenfell Tower fire, the recent terrorist attacks, and what does all this mean, and how do we respond as Christians in our day and age. So be sure and tune in next Friday for part one of my conversation with Bishop Mike Royal. I will see you again right here on the Preachers Forum podcast.